All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am talking about some of the Falcons' recent roster moves, their injuries, as well as answering some of the leftover listener questions from Tuesday's episode.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
So, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalconFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, and the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. I am on Twitter, at FalcFans. Today, I am answering more listener questions. A couple of them have to do with the devastating injuries that have cropped up for the Falcons in these last couple of days. We'll talk about some of the roster moves of the Falcons, the additions that they've made in light of some of these injuries, particularly Deion Jones and Keanu Neal going on injured reserve. And let's jump right into it. Let's talk about the roster moves. The Falcons have made a flurry of roster moves so much that it was hard for me to keep up with them. They signed Steven Means over the weekend, the defensive end from Philadelphia. They signed Keith Tandy, the former safety from Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They signed linebacker Corey Nelson, formerly of the Eagles, formerly of the Denver Broncos. They elevated running back Brian Hill to the practice squad to clear the roster for those four players. Keanu Neal and Deion Jones both went on injured reserve. Neal is out for the season with a torn ACL. Deion Jones is dealing with, I can't remember the exact nature of his foot injury, but he will miss at least 8 weeks. The expectation is that he will go on the short-term IR, which means he won't be back until Dallas, if I'm not mistaken. In week 11, if my math is correct. So, you know, they also cut Deontay Burton, who I believe landed with the Packers. Either they claimed him, I think they claimed him on the roster, and they cut long snapper Jeff Overball. They also made some additions to the practice squad. And Richard Jarvis was added to the practice squad after the Eagles game, after being cut to make room for Overball. They added cornerback Prince Charles Iwuara, formerly of the Redskins. They added two wide receivers in Christian Blake and Julian Williams. They cleared some space by cutting Jacob Tuoti Mariner, the defensive end. So a lot of roster moves. Obviously, the Neal and Jones ones are the most significant ones. But getting guys like Steven Means, getting guys like Keith Tanning, Corey Nelson, veteran players that have experience in this league that can contribute in ways. Means is a capable pass rusher. I think I've touched upon him briefly in a previous episode. But he was a guy that I had my eye on in Philadelphia, largely due to the fact that he sort of was overlooked because he was just buried under depth chart. But when he's gotten opportunities to play, not only in the preseason but also in the regular season, he has been a productive pass rusher. So hopefully he will bolster the Falcons' pass rush in the coming weeks. Keith Tandy, solid cover two safety for the Buccaneers, can play the run, not necessarily a coverage safety, but in terms of being a zone guy, he fits, probably will be slotted in as the reserve backup strong safety behind Ricardo Allen, who's going to fill in for Keanu Neal, as well as Jordan Richards. And, you know, he's also a valuable special teams player. You also have Corey Nelson, who initially, when I saw the Falcons signed him, I was a little disappointed, just only because the main thing I knew about Corey Nelson was that he was signed in Philadelphia this past offseason with the expectation that after they traded Michael Kendricks, he would sort of be the starter at that weak side linebacker spot, and he wound up getting cut by them. So that was sort of, you know, like, oh, well, this guy clearly can't be good if he was expected to be a starter, and a guy like Leroy Reynolds made the roster over him. But then going back and watching him in Denver, you know, he fits with the Falcons. He's an athletic guy. Has some coverage skills, and, you know, he's fast. Like, he's the classic Falcons linebacker, so he should be also able to contribute on defense in the event that guys like Riley and Olakun struggle over the next couple of weeks, but also Nelson can contribute on special teams. We know Brian Hill, you know, his elevation to the practice squad is a strong indicator that Devontae Freeman might not be healthy for this upcoming game against the Carolina Panthers. And right now, my expectation is that Devontae is not going to play, but we'll find out as we get later in the week. And I don't expect to see much of Brian Hill on offense. I think Tevin Coleman will take the bulk of the reps. You know, Ito Smith will probably give him a breather if that's the case. Maybe Hill gets a couple of snaps on offense, but primarily if he's active, he'll probably be asked to play special teams. Those are the roster moves in a nutshell. Let's get into some of the questions dealing some of, you know, the first one has to deal with the injuries to Nealon Jones, and we'll touch upon that those subjects. If you didn't listen to yesterday's episode that we did the crossover pod with host of Locked On Panthers, Bill Rossetti, we recorded that Monday night before we found out about Deion Jones going on IR. And, you know, I added a little outro at the end basically saying that in light of Deion Jones' injury, I was not very optimistic that the Falcons would wind up beating the Panthers. I still am not particularly optimistic, you know, 24 hours later. Largely due to the fact that I think, you know, stopping the Panthers' offense is so reliant on stopping the run. And now you've taken away the team's two best run defenders that don't play on the defensive line in Jones and Neal. Campbell's unreliable against the run. Riley is certainly unreliable against the run. Who knows what Ola Kuhn is at this point, but in brief reps that he's gotten during the preseason, he's okay, but he's not like amazing by any means. So we'll sort of have to see if these guys on the fly can sort of rise up, as it were, and be able to fill in those voids. You're not going to have the same presence at safety in Casey and Allen as you would with, you know, Neal and insert other safety, whether it's Allen or Casey. And, you know, the Falcons are probably going to rely heavily on playing a lot of zone. And zone is not the strength of Duke Riley or Devondre Campbell. So that could be a problem right there. And it's just a lot of things that the Falcons are going to have to work out. And, you know, as you guys can guess, a lot of it's going to fall not less necessarily on the Falcons defense stepping up, but the Falcons offense stepping up. And I just don't have the amount of confidence that they will, simply because I think the Panthers present some of the same issues that the Eagles present, which is a really formidable defensive front, a really formidable or even a more formidable linebacker core, even with Thomas Davis out of the lineup due to the suspension. And so it's really going to be on this offensive line to come back strong. But we'll talk about that later in this episode. Before we get into the listener questions, people are always asking me for advice, often it being betting advice. But the truth is, I don't often know who's going to win games. But I know if you guys think you have a clue on who's going to win these games, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to go to MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're the best bet you can make this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is very easy to use. Lay down some cash now and win big today. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and you fantasy people out there, you can even bet the over and under on how many fantasy points a player will score each week. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim your bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. So our first question is from Rise Up Till I'm Toes Up at Padre0920 on Twitter. The likelihood that Kamal Ishmael gets pressed back into strong safety duty with the injury to Keanu Neal? That is a question. I don't think Ishmael's going to be the strong safety. The Falcons have already sort of come out and said that Allen will be that guy. That's basically what they did in the second half of that Eagles game when Neal was out of lineup. They just played Allen at that strong safety spot. You know, I think the thing with losing Neal is, and we talked about this quite a bit during the summer because of the question marks surrounding who the third linebacker is, Duke Riley, for the most part, which was that the Falcons could basically get away with not playing base defense because when they play nickel and you have five DBs on the field and that fifth DB is the third cornerback, Brian Poole, playing a slot, what they could wind up doing, because the Falcons play so much cover one and cover three and have one deep safety in the middle of the field, what they could wind up doing is bringing Keanu Neal up into the box as that extra linebacker, essentially, even when they went nickel, because he was functionally as good. And regular listeners of the show, I often claimed that he would basically be, you know, he was a better run defender than some of even guys like Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, or at least a more reliable run defender in that regard. And so basically when the Falcons played nickel, they were a functionally a base defense, just as capable as a base defense. And the problem with Neal being on the lineup is Allen is not going to bring that presence. Casey is not going to bring that presence. And so what you might see a function of is the Falcons being more willing to play base defense rather than being nickel. I think the stats I saw is the Falcons played like 85% nickel against the Eagles versus 15% base. You might see that go back to the quote unquote norm of seeing mostly, you know, 60 to 70% nickel and 30% base, which is the norm for the most part. And I think that will be something we'll probably see quite a bit against the Panthers, given how effective their running game is. And you don't want to present a soft box, which is typically what happens when you play nickel, because what that means is you have the four defensive linemen, the two linebackers, and nickel. And so you have six defenders in the box. But with the offense having five offensive linemen and typically a tight end, you basically have six blockers for running if you run the ball. And so if the offense is effective at getting a hat on a hat, they have an advantage numbers-wise. And because of Cam Newton's ability as a runner, essentially with the read option, if you present that soft box, they have one more offensive ball carrier than you have defenders. And so you have to sort of have that seventh guy in the box. And when Neal was that guy, you know, it was great. But if Duke Riley, or now with Deion Jones out of lineup, and Duke Riley playing middle linebacker, and now Foye Olukun being that seventh defender, there are question marks. And one option the Falcons could potentially do is have Kamal Ishmael be that guy, just because he's a little bit more of a reliable veteran presence. The knock on Ishmael, however, is he's not particularly good in coverage, and that's one of the reasons why he's no longer a safety. And so Olukun and Riley both bring much more ability and an upside as, in terms of their ability to play man coverage, and also due to their increased speed over Ishmael. So I'll be curious to see if Ishmael gets any serious reps this week. I think he should, but, you know, at the same time, I can understand why the Falcons want to see what Riley and Olukun can do, because long term, those guys have a little bit more upside. My expectation for this Panthers game is going to be that the Falcons are going to rely heavily on zone. Obviously, you want to do that because of Cam Newton's running ability, so that you can all defenders can keep an eye on Cam Newton. Again, if you had Neal, if you had Jones, you could risk playing man coverage and have one of those guys spy Cam Newton. We saw last year in the Buffalo game when they asked Deion Jones to do it, he was not very good spying Tyrod Taylor. But when they switched to Keanu Neal in the second half of that game, he was much more effective. And so that's going to be a big element that you're going to lose by having both of those guys out of the lineup. So I expect the reaction that the Falcons will do is wind up playing predominantly zone. We saw the stat I charted, which was when Neal was healthy and in the game, they played a man coverage about 36% of the time versus zone the other 64% of the time. And when Neal was out of the game, they played man 18% of the time versus zone 82% of the time. So I expect we're going to see more of that latter figure with Neal out of the lineup as well as Jones as well. So we'll have to see what happens. To me, the big challenge against Carolina is going to be who's going to cover Christian McCaffrey when he splits out wide. You know, we saw last year when the Saints did that with Alvin Kamara, they split out Neal wide to cover him. We saw last season in week 17 that it was Deion Jones' primary responsibility to follow Christian McCaffrey all over the field, but that was partially due to the fact that the Panthers were getting Greg Olsen back, and Neal was primarily responsible for keeping Olsen contained along with several other players. So, you know, I don't feel like the Falcons are going to employ that strategy like they did in week 17 without Jones and without Neal. So, again, it goes back to my thoughts that they'll play a lot of zone. They're not going to play a 100% zone, but I think more than likely when they do play man, you'll see Campbell covering the tight end. You'll see Riley either covering McCaffrey or spying the quarterback. And I think when they split out McCaffrey, for my money, the player that makes the most sense to play against McCaffrey when he splits out wide is DeMonte Casey. But they could also put Ricardo Allen on him. I think Casey's a better matchup for McCaffrey. I think McCaffrey might be a little too quick for Ricardo Allen, but we'll sort of see how that plays out. And so that's going to be a serious challenge. People have sort of suggested that maybe Vic Beasley could spy him, but, you know, given that the Panthers have a massive hole at the right tackle spot due to Darrell Williams, I don't think you want to waste Vic Beasley's talents spying Cam Newton. There may be a couple of times where he doesn't rush, but for the most part, I think you want to get him or Tack or whoever's lining up at that left defensive end spot as many opportunities to rush the quarterback as possible. And the reality is Vic Beasley's not a great open field tackler anyway. So him trying to tackle Cam Newton in the open field as a spy, it just doesn't work. Like, he can tackle Colin Kaepernick. He can chase Cam down from behind. Like, when he tackles Cam, usually it's him chasing him down from behind and tripping him up. But in terms of, like, dropping and then being, like, the one guy that you have to – Cam has to shake in the open field in order to get outside the pocket and scramble for yards, I just don't think that's a matchup that's conducive for Vic Beasley. So ultimately, the Falcons' main issue on defense is going to be with all these injuries because of the likely to rely on zone. They have to get pressure with four guys because essentially what they're going to do is they're going to drop seven in the coverage. And that's going to be the main thing that they're going to have to do moving forward without Jones and Neal in the lineup for at least the next, nine weeks, eight games. And so they're going to have to rely much more heavily on their pass rush. And the good thing is the Panthers have issues on their offensive line. Trey Turner is in the concussion protocol, so he might not play at right guard. And, you know, we have seemingly Amini Sulatulu is going to start at right tackle. He was terrible in the second half of that game when he came in for Darrell Williams. The Panthers just picked up Chris Clark. They traded for Corey Robinson. Chris Clark has been bad in Houston the last couple of years. Corey Robinson was not very good in Detroit. So really the Panthers have three competent offensive linemen if Turner doesn't play this week. And so the Falcons need to really take advantage of it. They really need to dominate this group of guys. They need to make, you know, this is a perfect matchup for Vic Beasley. As we often say on this podcast, he dominates backups. He's going to be facing a backup. Whoever's going to play that right tackle position is going to be a backup. So he needs to make that guy look like Tyson Braylo 2.0. Tack McKinley is going to be facing a lot of Taylor Moton. They do alternate sides occasionally, but I don't necessarily know if, you know, primarily you're going to see one guy lining up on the other side. But when Tack is going up against Taylor Moton, who's be making his, I don't know, his fourth start, career start or whatever it is, he needs to make that guy look like he's an inexperienced player. Moton has played well for the Panthers this preseason, this so in 1 week and going back to previous years, but he needs to be exposed. And Grady Jarrett has to dominate Greg Van Rotten or whoever the Panthers put at right guard, along with guys like Jack Crawford and Terrell McClain and Brooks Reed as well. So they have to really dominate this game. If they don't, then the Panthers are going to be able to just pound the ball down their throat, in my opinion. So that's going to be a major issue. And so I think essentially we're going to have to see this Falcons pass rush step up and flip the script from what we saw in the Philadelphia game. I don't necessarily expect them, you know, to hit Cam Newton 13 times, but I do think that number has to be like 8 to 10 at least in order for this pass rush to say that they had a good performance. I think getting in the double digits obviously will be a positive. So the closer they get to that or exceed that, then that'll be a positive. So that's the main thing I have to say about the Falcons defense in the absence of these guys. LAX Nedrick. LAX in Nedrick. I don't know how to say his name. How do you feel about Donovan Smith? Is this officially a beef thing? Yes, it is a beef. The fact that, you know, Donovan Smith also went to Penn State. I am a Pitt alum for some of you guys that don't know that, makes this beef even more legitimate. I'm going to slow play this, so I'm not going to necessarily, you know, do everything. This is like another month before the Falcons play the Bucs, so, you know, I'll, you know, tease some things out on Twitter and whatnot. It's a Twitter beef. You know, Twitter fingers turn to trigger fingers, or trigger fingers turn to Twitter fingers, whatever the line is. You know, we play the Bucks, I think, on the 14th. So my goal is to get blocked by Donovan Smith by October 15th. So I am open for suggestions, since, you know, this is my first real Twitter beef. And I know some of you guys out there probably have dreamed of being in Twitter beefs or have experienced being in Twitter beefs. So if you've been dreaming up scenarios, I am open to suggestions to help me out and enhance my Donovan Smith Twitter beef. But again, we're going to slow play this. But, you know, send me your suggestions, DM me, you know, hit me up on Twitter at FalcFans or whatever. We got some more questions coming up. But before we get into those, I want to let you guys know about The Athletic, your go-to subscription-based publisher for smarter sports coverage for all you diehard fans. And I know if you listen to Locked On Falcons, then The Athletic has the coverage that you crave. The Athletic's model is simple. No ads, no pop-ups, no autoplay videos. Instead, read and subscribe to authentic, in-depth coverage written by journalists who know their teams inside and out. The Athletic's coverage goes beyond game recaps and trade speculation to provide smarter analysis and deeper perspectives about teams in the league. Subscribers have access to local and national content with 700 news stories published every week across all sports. Subscribe and be part of the future of sports journalism. Check out The Athletic today and get your Falcons fix with the help of Athletic Atlanta writer Jason Butt. You can get a 40% discount on your annual subscription by heading over to theathletic.com/lockedonfalcons. Again, that's theathletic.com/lockedonfalcons. Trey at Real D McClee on Twitter asks, how were the route combos? If Matt had more time, could he have spread the ball around? I think the route combinations against Philadelphia were better. Until they weren't, as we've talked about before, those four last plays where the Falcons ran five verticals in the red zone, those were terrible route combinations. Those aren't even route combinations at all. It's just run down the field and turn around and Matt Ryan will throw you the ball. That's basically what it is. I'm not a huge fan of the four verticals concept. It is effective against certain coverages, but certainly not in the red zone. That's like to me, that's the dumbest thing you can call in that situation. And that's part of the reason why, while I think Sark made strides, at the same time, it's so frustrating to see him just completely crap the bed in that sort of crunch time situation. And so even with the positive strides that I think he made with the route combinations through the first couple of quarters of that game, it's just sort of negated after that point. But the hope is that he can sort of build off of that. And I do think if Ryan had more time, that some of these route combinations would have been developed into some plays. The issue the Falcons are going to have to face is, like, they're not going to get, you know, this Panthers D-line, while it's an easier matchup than the Eagles, it's not an easy matchup. And you got the Panthers, you got the Saints, you got the Bengals coming up, and these aren't going to be cakewalks. Kawhan Short, Cameron Jordan, these guys, as far as our offensive line is concerned, are just as unblockable as Fletcher Cox's. Because if you go back and you watch their performances against our offensive line over the last 2 years, they've been dominant in those games for the most part. And, you know, Carl Lawson, I can't imagine the things that Carl Lawson's going to do to Jake Matthews when we play in that Cincinnati Bengals, let alone what Geno Atkins is going to do to our interior offensive line. So, you know, I don't want to sound doom and gloom when I say this, but there's a possibility. This is probably an overreaction. We'll find out. But what else am I going to talk about? You know, there's a possibility that Lavitre and Schrader have sort of hit that wall that Todd McClure and Tyson Claypool hit in 2012. We make fun of the Falcons' decision to turn the keys over to Peter Kahn and Lamar Holmes in 2013, but they didn't do that without cause. They did it because McClure and Claypool definitely hit the wall the previous year. They were not wrong for getting rid of those guys. What they were wrong, maybe they should have kept one of them or something like that. But anyway, it's possible that several of the veterans on our current offensive line might be hitting that wall based off of their performance in week one. We'll see if they bounce back this week. But again, it's not going to get any easier. That's what I'm saying. So we'll find out. Scott Ramsey at X Never Broken X. Question for the podcast. Matt Ryan has been uncomfortable in Sark's offense since day one, despite him having a decent year. In 2017, it is obvious the Sark effect changed our MVP quarterback into a shaky middle of the top of line quarterback. In your opinion, that is worded weird, Scott. In your opinion, how much longer do you think we are going to have to be part of the Sark experience gone wrong? I watch football religiously. I see all these teams with half the talent succeed at a level far greater than we look on a good day. It is infuriating. I'm confident that with even a halfway decent offensive mind running the show, we could/would return to the championship form. The dude at Dude Order on Twitter asks, how does Sark keep his job? Chris Clark at Irv Gotti on Twitter asks, when will the Falcons give Gary Kubiak a call? So all these questions are quasi-related. I don't see the Falcons firing Sark midseason. I doubt it. I think the injuries to the defense kind of take some pressure off of Sark, even though I know the obvious, it sort of contradicts what the expectations and probably things I've said earlier, which is the pressures on the offense to carry the team. But what it means now is because DQ is going to be so focused on getting this defense up to par that he's probably not going to risk shaking up the offense by firing the offensive coordinator in the first month of the season. That's what I mean by it's going to take pressure off of Sark in terms of like his job security. I don't think firing Sark is likely to begin with. I think basically the only way that would happen is over the next three or four games if the Falcons like score one touchdown. And we're talking about instead of averaging between 17 and 24 points per game in that span, they're averaging like 6 to 13 points per game. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that 17 to 24 points is good enough, because it's not, especially given the talent that Scott referred to. But I think Dan Quinn's mindset is always going to be like, well, we're right on the cusp. We just got to figure out these a couple of more things, and as the season wears on, we'll figure it out, which is what we did last year in 2017. We're going to do it again in 2018. So even if we get off to the sluggish start, we'll figure it out and get things going. And so I don't necessarily expect the Falcons to make a move midseason in terms of their offensive coordinator. As for Kubiak, he is under contract in Denver, so you know they can't give him a call really until after the season. But if they do make a move midseason, then Greg Knapp is the obvious candidate to replace Sark. You know, in terms of Sark lasting beyond the season, I don't know. I think he probably will. If you were asking me to put money on it, I would probably put money that he will be still the offensive coordinator in 2019, but I wouldn't put a lot of money on it. It all sort of depends on how the rest of the season plays out. You know, if we're losing games 28 to 24, I don't think Sark is going to be in danger of losing his job. If we're losing games 20 to 17, then I think we can start having that conversation. So, you know, I think it's too early to pull the plug on Sark. But it is certainly frustrating. I'm there with you on the frustration level. It's just I don't necessarily prescribe to the idea. Let's get a brand new offensive coordinator who has even less experience working with this offensive personnel. And you know, and I'm talking about Greg Knapp. And let's see what he can do, you know, especially when Greg Knapp doesn't have the most illustrious history of producing these, you know, prolific offenses in the past. So I feel like the Falcons have sort of made their bed with Sark this season, and we'll have to lie in it and see what happens. Hopefully he figures it out. That, again, going back to what was asked previously, I think there are believed to be strides to be made. We'll just have to sort of hope that, in contrast to what I just said a couple of minutes ago, that, you know, the issues that they saw in the Philadelphia game were more related to the Eagles' defense than necessarily systemic issues dealing with Sark and the Falcons' offense. As you well know, I'm not necessarily sold on that belief, but again, we got 15 more games to go, and we'll see how it all plays out. All right, guys, that's going to be it for me this week. Hurricane Florence is bearing down on North Carolina. For those of you that don't know, I live in the Triangle, Raleigh-Durham area in North Carolina, so we are, last I saw, we were kind of in the path of that, so that's supposed to hit on Friday for me. I feel like I'm going to be okay, but you know, you never know with these sort of storms. You know, there's always seemingly one really bad one that hits every year. You know, you can thank the Chinese and their global warming conspiracy for that one. But we'll have to see. And hopefully I'll be back on Monday to talk about this, give you guys my rapid reaction to this Panther game. Hopefully, you know, assuming I have power, I will. So, you know, if you guys, you know, I'll give you guys updates. If anything goes wrong, you'll know I'm from Twitter. But if not, you don't hear from me. If it's, you know, I'm still tweeting about, you know, fourth string tight ends and whatnot, you know, come Friday and Saturday, then, you know, I'm doing just fine. So there you have it, guys. If you want to provide your feedback to me about, you know, how I should beef with Donovan Smith, let me know on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans if it's podcast related, which I don't want to necessarily make the Donovan Smith beef the official beef of the Locked On Falcons podcast, because, you know, I'm trying to go corporate here. But, you know, send your Donovan Smith suggestions to FalcFans on Twitter. But any other podcast related things, you can send to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Facebook is Locked On Falcons. Give us a like while you're there. The email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at falcons.com where the podcast is posted daily. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.